All right, we're going into the middle letters. Wait a minute, that's your job to do this part.
No, you started. Go, take it away. You bet. You're fine.
Last week I did an excursus where it really was between the first set of letters and the second set, the early and the middle letters of Paul. And it's kind of like what I did before I started the early letters and working on interpretation. And this whole idea of the perspectives of Paul and how that's radically shifted interpretation. So this morning is actually the first official one. So if you were in book one of the middle series, you would have book one deals with Paul's middle letters and then does a summary or essence of each one. So you're oriented toward the series before we go in depth into each book. And this is a smaller section. There's just four books in it. This one's, think of last time as just in between, although I am going to make a comment on it. I might mention, too, that I've only got 27 slides, and I've had as many as 50. So we should be in good shape for this morning.
Referring to time,
I'm going to work hard. I'm going to work hard at 30 minutes. But as we go into this, as we do the transition, Michael, what are you? I was also reflecting on the fact that on the other times when we did things a different way, I did an introduction and conclusion. But this is really a much better way of doing it to reflect together on the introduction. It has many, many levels of significance as I'm going into this for our churches, for our networks, you know, in this series. But doing it where we go off on what strikes us in each situation, I think, and then our discussions here is just a much superior way when I looked at the introductions themselves. So I'm encouraged that we're going this direction. But what are you thinking as we're going into the middle letters, transitioning out of the others, and anticipations? What have you been reflecting on?
One of the items I would mention that I'm reflecting on is looking, as we go into these middle letters, looking for the organizing centers. I think what came out a little bit more this time around in the early letters was Romans 16. 1 Timothy 3 is in the later letters, but just that there's that tough boy that there's this if that organizing centerpiece that whole if I'm trying to establish you in my gospel, said Paul. And if you can understand the context by which he says those statements, it really just helps you to understand 2 Corinthians. It helps you understand 2 Corinthians so that when we're having conversations with other people and they're using 2 Corinthians, we right away, boom, I can in my head, I can tie one of my hands to what Paul and Christ wants us to be tied to all the time, and I can interact in culture at the same time. But in that very moment, in that split second, are you with me? I can tie myself to, I can compare myself to the rock of what the principle is from Scripture. So this time going through, what am I reflecting on, looking forward to, or wanting to learn? The organizing centers of Ephesians, Colossians, Philemon, Philippians. So that would be the first thing. The second thing I would add as we go into this is we've spent, from a global network perspective, have another layer of understanding about I mentioned it here, but another layer of understanding just about biblical authority, biblical leadership, and positional leadership, and how that is helpful, and how it's a, man, it's clear in your head, but it's not always clear when it comes out. That's what the church needs in order to be fully equipped and be fully united, according to Ephesians 4, 11 through 16. And if we're understanding the difference of that, and so I'm really looking forward to these letters. Ephesians is one of the middle letters, of course, but we are building and participating in a global, complex apostolic network. Do you remember that complex apostolic network chart? We are building that because that's what the book of Acts shows us. And so I think these letters give us a lot more data points to building that than the early letters necessarily did. I mean, we still get a handful of data points, I think, from the early letters on it. But Paul was focused on establishing them in the good news and in the teachings of the good news. So those are the two things I'm looking for.
Yeah, you might even reflect a little bit on our time on Thursday in terms of what we're looking to gain greater clarity in, you know, with these letters in terms of building a complex network. We have all these partners around the world, and we work with the team of partner resource team and global resource teams. But it's when we've really gotten into the global part of it, it's been clear that some of that isn't. We haven't solved the tension between we haven't solved the tension between having teams of people that can do everything we do here, so this thing can replicate, and there can and we can service partner networks, you know, all over the world from these teams. But we never sorted out, is there an apostolic team? There's an apostolic team in every network, but is there an apostolic team that for India, you know, or for China, you know, or for Africa? And what I'm looking forward to, we've got our hands on Acts well, and there is information, 1 Corinthians 16, Romans 16, but people don't look at the middle letters as really contributing much to a whole network. To the network that Paul's bringing. They don't see a lot of the stuff that's there. And so I'm anticipating as we go into this, we didn't finish them. We only got halfway into this middle section before we shifted gears. So I'm looking forward to some of those answers.
Yeah. Why don't we do the... I have three things to say. It's going to take me 8 minutes to say them. Colossians, I'm going to wait.
So I'm on?
Yep, you're up.
Neither one of us are stable.
That was a pretty good transition. It was a false start, but...
You know, I want to separate it from the message. So before I get up there... I just want to add what's really interesting when you take Sanders' work, and I told you these two books just came out in 20 and 21, which is just phenomenal work on interpreting Paul. And when they were coming out, I knew, you remember I talked about the fact that let's not restart this series till I'm up to speed, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm aware of the new contributions because they're so significant. And now, and one of these is called Interpreting Paul, the other is Constructing Paul. So it's the new perspectives on Paul and how it radically changes how we go after his passages, how we go after the organizing center, what it is that he's really doing. But also what's come out, I showed you last time and a couple times ago, Interpreting Paul by N.T. Wright, but it's part of a three-volume set, Interpreting Paul, Interpreting Scripture, and Interpreting Jesus. And Interpreting Jesus goes back 30 years in his work on the historical Jesus and the just phenomenal stuff that, again, shaped our gospel series tremendously. Then Interpreting Scripture goes back to his articles 20 years forward. But then Interpreting Paul is all his new stuff since 2:14. But everything in these three series are not excerpts from his other works. What they just came up with a brilliant idea together with the, he did together with a publisher, in the sense that all of his works are operating on a completely different hermeneutic. And we're in that hermeneutic. I mean, we began the journey with E.D. Hirsch and Validity and Interpretation, that we got to get after author's intention and literary design. And Walt Kaiser's article was a big influence on us, that by calling for a reformation in hermeneutics. And so we shaped everything: author's intent, literary design, biblical theology, theology and culture. And that's all in the conversations of, hey, we got to go different after Paul. He's not this systematic theologian that's trying to give us terms on what systematic theology means about justification, for example. And but what they did was they started this series, or they put this series together all at one time, by finding his article, by under the assumption that there's a different hermeneutic that he's operating with, and nobody's really articulated it. You know, I mean, what is that interpretive process? And so this series is designed to do that, and as well as Luke Timothy Johnson, which is just stunning stuff, a lot of stuff I didn't know. But what's interesting is that Sanders, who started it all in the New Perspectives of Paul, he's liberal. Luke Timothy Johnson is Catholic, and N.T. Wright is evangelical. And they're all coming to the same conclusions. It's stunning, because we've gotten rid of this horrible way of interpreting that has followed us on the other side of the Reformation. So at any rate, that's really the work. As I look back on it, starting in January, I won't have been on an airplane for 2 years. I've traveled 6 million miles, and now for 2 years, I haven't gotten on an airplane. And it's kind of like I do feel like a little bit like imprisoned from that, but
you're under house arrest.
But because the first year related very much to Luke Timothy Johnson and really rethinking the second. Anyway, my whole thinking has gone to a completely different level. So yeah. I don't know if I'll ever do it or not. But I created a third interpreting course, New Perspectives on Paul, a Radical Hermeneutical Turn. Unit 1, new perspectives in hermeneutics. 2 is Interpreting Paul. 3 is Paul and Greco-Roman research. If you think of the gathering in that, several pages of Greco-Roman research on Paul. Yeah. Then Practicing Pauline Theology and Culture. That's what Luke Timothy Johnson is doing here, when in his second book, where he doesn't do topics, but he deals with sections of Paul's thought, you know, and begins. But all of these guys in Sanders and the second volume here, and actually what he's doing in these three volumes, is exactly this: practicing Pauline theology and culture. And then the last one is Toward a Post Perspectives on Old and New Testament Theology, because it changes how you think about New Testament theology. So if nothing else, that's I didn't create this by intention. I just recognized it, that that's what has been the main part of what I've been studying this last year, that shapes out, you know, these last 2 years.
Yeah.
That shapes out like that. So if nothing else, if we don't produce it as a course, we'll take the 7 of us on that Monday afternoon that you're talking about, and work through some of that. But I kind of wanted to separate this a little bit from the message itself.
Ah, go back.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at that. Go back two slides real quick, please. Sorry.
What am I doing? I'm going the wrong direction.
Oh, boy. I'm glad I didn't take those 8 minutes I was talking about. Right there. No, back one. One more. Forward. No, the other way.
Oh, you know, boy. This probably isn't real professional.
Right there. Thank you. Okay, now you can do whatever you want.
Okay. Whoops, I'm looking at my screen, not... Sorry. You can see...
We're long past sorry.
Okay, now we're going into the middle letters of Paul, and we'll soon find out whether I can see. This is what we're going to discuss today. In what way or ways are Paul's middle letters different from his early letters? And by the way, I still can't always see, but it's getting to the points where everything is crystal clear, you know, all the way through. It's unbelievable. And then I lose it every now and then, but now I'm confident that I'm going in the right direction, except now I just lost it. In what ways or ways are Paul's middle letters different from his early letters? Think about that, because they're so different that there's liberal theology follows the argument that Paul didn't write these letters. There's a tradition of Paul, and one of his disciples wrote them, because the style is different in these middle letters as he wrote from prison than when he was writing in a traveling mode and fighting the issues more with the churches and fighting the gospel. It's very interesting to reflect on that. Two, what new revelation is contained in them? How significant is that revelation? And because some things become clear that have been hidden in the past, and now they're with full clarity right here in these four little booklets, or four little letters. Paul had two experiences of solitude, 3 years in the wilderness and 2 years under house arrest. Why is this significant to the development of the Kerygma and Didache in our churches today? And what is the main contribution of the middle letters to the theology of Paul and to understanding the centrality of the church in a grand strategy? When we're discussing this afterwards, in a way, all of you are pretty well versed in these middle letters, so you can jump into this discussion, but technically, you can't fully answer these questions until we've gone through these letters. And then you can go back and revisit them. So probably focus on number four, the main contribution, any of them, actually, when we get there. And again, I'm putting the framework over all of this writing as new perspectives on Paul, because that's what the framework, the hermeneutical framework that now is crystal clear in my thinking, has been made much clearer by Luke Timothy Johnson and N.T. Wright, but it's what we've used all along. And that will become clearer and clearer as we finish this. In the middle letters, in the middle letters, we get full revelation of Christ's grand strategy after he inaugurated the kingdom, that is his church. And we also we'll look at the letters from the vantage point of building his global apostolic network. So, again, the Christ's grand strategy is now completely revealed in these letters, especially Ephesians and Colossians. But again, he doesn't have a lot of information like Acts, but when you understand Acts and when you understand his references here and there and what he was doing with these letters, it becomes crystal clear what we have to do in every apostolic network, what we have to do in every network of churches and in every church for them to become stable. And again, they were written in a very short period of time while he was under house arrest. Ephesians was written in autumn of 60, Colossians and Philemon in autumn of 61, and Philippians in early spring of 62. And so again, these are where we get the full revelation. And that's different. This intense short writing is different than how he wrote the his early letters that were spread out roughly all around an argument of the gospel for over a decade. And that has significance as we reflect on it later as well. And of course, we're dealing here all the way from 49 to 56, but 2 years earlier, the conversation started on the gospel. And here, by the way, here's Nate's layout for the new covers for series two. What we're doing is we're following the same theme, but breaking it up, because we'll have the whole New Testament. We'll do Paul's his middle letters, his later letters, then we'll do the Jewish epistles, then Johannine literature. So he'll follow that design all the way through, but you're not sitting there with all these booklets, you know, looking exactly the same, but they fit together well. It's a beautiful design. We just have Nate just has a tremendous gift in making the whole collection work together. And last time we added to the idea of Paul's early, middle, later letters being strong in the gospel, strong in the mission in the church, and strong in the household, mature households and leaders. Organizing center is of the early letters is Romans 16, 20, 25 to 27, where he establishes them fully in the gospel. The organizing center of the middle letters now is Ephesians 3, 8 to 10, to bring to light what is the plan, Christ's grand strategy for the church, and 1 Timothy 3, 14 and 15 for the last letters, how people should behave in the household of God, guidelines for a family of families in the assembly. Now, back to these letters written close together at the end of Acts during Paul's time of imprisonment when he was under house arrest from February 60 to March 62. Here we're really looking into the heart of Paul's network. And it's just interesting that he's in the position he is in and what God reveals to him during that time. If the work is going to be preserved, and remember, he's concerned about the work being preserved. First Corinthians 15, he doesn't want his work to fall apart and all that he's done to be done in vain. And you can see that kind of flavor in stabilizing the churches in the Gospels. But when you get to Ephesians and Colossians and Philippians, you see more deeply into what is really happening within this network of churches. And through looking at Ephesians and Colossians, Philemon, at the front end of this, you can see very clearly into what his concerns were and what he was thinking about in terms of making sure that this fruit lasted. And so really you get a picture here in Ephesians where you can see that Ephesians is the hub. Colossians and Philemon is a cluster of churches. And then Philippians is noted as a really significant church participating with him in the gospel from the first day until now. So you see the church's participation, but not only participation with Paul, but how they were the infrastructure to the network that was building. And I believe this was all laid out as a pattern for us to clearly understand the continued unfolding of the design of Christ, to see that these churches are at the center of his plan and they're multiplying and they spread all over the world. The organizing center idea of these four small letters is in Ephesians 3, 7 to 10. Of this gospel, I became a servant according to the gift of God's grace that was given to me by the working of his power. Although I am the very least of all the saints, this grace was given to me for two reasons: to bring to the Gentiles the news of the boundless riches of Christ, or to proclaim the gospel to the Gentiles. Is actually a better translation than this is N.T. Wright's, but I wanted the second part of this, so I stayed with his translation. And to make everyone, the second part is to make everyone see what is the plan of the mystery, which for ages has been hidden in God, who created all things, so that through the church, the wisdom of God might now be made known to the rulers and authorities in heavenly places. And so at the very core, Paul says, I've been given a twofold job description. My stewardship, he said, is twofold: to preach the gospel to the Gentiles, and that was a 10-year battle for the gospel, to get it clear for the Gentiles. So not only was it taking the gospel out to these places, but getting a full understanding of that gospel into the Gentiles, and to fully reveal the heart of Christ's grand strategy, the church. Now, when you look at the three letters and you look at the role that they played, well, first of all, Ephesians gives us a picture of hub churches. Ephesians was a manifesto revealing Christ's grand strategy, the church, to his key hub churches in Ephesus, with special attention to the training of elders in this strategic city for an entire 3-year period in the whole plan of God. And you have to ask yourself the question, why would he spend 3 years in Ephesus? Why would he identify his time as two things? One is the proclamation of the gospel through the hall of Tyrannus, so that at least 7 churches strategically were clusters of churches were planted around Ephesus while he spent his time there, but 3 years night and day with the elders, because he normally wouldn't do that. He'd work with his apostolic team, he'd get the church established, but this was a hub, and he was 3 years in that hub, and he knew that that senior eldership needed to be really strong. That's what he tells us in Acts 20 and 19 here. Actually, I think I might have a verse wrong here. He says in 20 and 31, this is correct, I did not shrink from doing anything helpful, proclaiming the message to you and teaching you publicly from house to house. Therefore, be on the alert, remembering that for 3 years, night and day, for 3 years I did not cease, night or day, to warn each one of you with tears. And he's addressing the elders here. So he taught them publicly, he taught them house to house, and he invested 3 years in helping them grasp the whole counsel of God. Which, by the way, when you take that diagram that I have at the beginning, where it shows the resources that are there and compare them to the book of Acts, that is, from a biblical theology standpoint, what is done there with the story, the early, middle, later letters, is exactly what Paul did and what he was referring to when he said, teach them the whole household of God. But then back in Acts 19, 8 to 10, it says, and he entered the synagogue and for 3 months spoke out boldly and argued persuasively about the kingdom of God. When some stubbornly refused to believe and spoke evil of the way before the congregation, he left them, taking the disciples with him, and argued daily in the lecture hall of Tyrannus. This continued for 2 years, so that residents of Asia, both Jews and Greeks, heard the word of the Lord. And this was the Greek style of that time. It was just like Plato's Academy. There were places where you could go in these halls, and it was expected that oftentimes from, I think it was 10 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, was kind of an open forum time in a lot of these Greek halls. And Paul took advantage of that structure, and so as a result, there were churches planted around. We know that Ephesus was a strategic hub for many reasons. The biggest reason was Paul's own investment of time. He taught them out of the Hall of Trinus for 2 years and established many churches in the surrounding area. 11 churches actually were started in the east, north, and west of Ephesus. Those are the ones that we can just recreate from Acts and from these letters of how many were planted at that time. Now, why would he do this if it wasn't strategic as a hub? Now, Colossians gives us more of the picture of this time. Colossians is an almost identical letter to Ephesus, to Ephesians. And that's always been a subject of debate for those that are seriously writing on Paul's letters, is why would he put Colossians in there when it's almost identical to Ephesians? It follows the exact same structure. Some things are abbreviated, like it has the household texts in Ephesians, which are 5:22 to 6:10. It's a larger section. But then, 3:18 to 4:1 is the household text, I believe, in Colossians. It's much smaller, but the structure is the same all the way through the letter. But really, what you begin to see in Colossians is that it's written 1 year after Ephesus, and he's addressing a cluster of churches up north of Ephesus in Colossians. And here he doesn't address as much a specific situation, but you get a snapshot and you can see, wow, this grand strategy, he's got it in action. It's taking place because he's addressing a cluster of churches up there. He's talking to them about dealing in Philemon with this slavery issue, and you get the whole picture of this household of households, this family of families, and how it's strategic that these churches are stabilized, but it's like he's working with Ephesians, with them, so you can see it in a bit of action. And so you really get a cluster here. Colossians is almost an identical letter with Ephesians, along with Philemon, and was written to the house churches throughout the Lycus Valley, Colossae, Laodicea, and Hierapolis, and a year after the writing, the manifesto of the Ephesian churches, to help them at a very practical level to implement the new church paradigm in their network of churches, a model as a framework for the entire history of clusters of churches down through the centuries. I believe all these letters not only give us that content, but are situational letters, and they're situational so we know how to work in all our different situations. It's phenomenal stuff. Then Philemon is to practically illustrate to the networks in the churches in the Lycus Valley, the importance of Christ's grand strategy of the kingdom through the church to restructure all their social relationships, including slavery, around the church as a family of families, the household social structure of the church, which was evident in the Greek Republic ideal, of the day. So you got Plato's Republic, and Plato was trying to do the same thing. He has the household text. He lays out, you know, a picture of the Republic and a picture of the city and the picture of a citizen, but from a wisdom standpoint, but not anywhere near the clarity, let alone the power and the overall purpose and plan of Christ that we see in this little letter. And it's very interesting too. Actually, we'll get into it more. I'll leave it till we get to it. Now, the complex apostolic network insights from Colossians and Philemon. Colossians was key because it was part of a cluster of churches in the Lycus Valley. It was evidently the most strategic of the three churches there, which included Laodicea and Hierapolis. He says in Colossians 4:15 and 16, give my greetings to the brothers and sisters in Laodicea, to Nympha and the church in her house. There's so much insight in that stuff. And when this letter has been read among you, have it read also in the church of the Laodiceans, and see to it that you read also the letter from Laodicea. So again, we just have these 13 letters that the Spirit has sovereignly brought into the heart of the New Testament. We just have those letters, but there were other things that were written, which gives you more insight into how Paul was going at this. Philippi, the church, was a strategic network of churches in Philippi that participated with Paul from its inception. Ephesians gives the full and mature presentation of the centrality of the church as part of Christ's grand strategy for bringing in the kingdom. Now, Philippians, Paul illustrates the importance of churches participating with one mind in that progress of the gospel through his grand strategy, the church. And again, this is probably a section I've used here almost more than anywhere. We just finds its way into everything. I thank my God every time I remember you, constantly praying with joy in every one of my prayers for you all because of your sharing in the gospel from the first day until now. I am confident of this, that the one who began a good work among you will bring it to completion by the day of Christ. It is only right for me to think this way about you because you hold me in your heart, for all of you share in God's grace with me, both in my imprisonment and defense and confirmation of the gospel. So the Philippian church was an individual church that was identified, but participated with Paul from the very beginning. They sent, in the progress of the gospel, they sent financial gifts on many occasions. They sent Epaphroditus to be a personal assistant to Paul, and Yodi and Syntyche were marked out as two women co-workers on Paul's team that were part of this church or cluster of churches. And these churches were part of Paul's network, or part of the network that Paul was building, and we learn more as we will study each one of these. So now we come back to the significance of Paul's middle letters. Why are Paul's middle letters so significant for the churches today? We're going to get a full understanding of that as we go through in depth these letters. We'll do a snapshot of Ephesians next week, a snapshot of Colossians and Philemon. And then 3 weeks from now, a snapshot of Philippians. So you'll be able to answer this more in depth. And then, of course, in the booklets that follow, you'll study 5 or 6 weeks, you know, in each one of those letters. And by the way, we've taught Ephesians, and we got 3 sessions into Colossians when we stopped. So we'll actually do these key letters. The synopsis, these 4 weeks, so book one, and then we'll, we won't do Ephesians again, but we will do all of Colossians again. So there can be a consistency through it since we only got through the first 3 sessions. And then we'll spend the 4 sessions on Ephesians. Then we'll be done with the middle letters, and we'll start in probably by mid-January, we'll do the later letters of Paul. So right now you can begin to answer these a little bit from just what I've given you. In what way do they establish the centrality of the church in this strategy? What are some of the implications of failing to understand the fullness of this strategy? And why are his letters so misunderstood today? Actually, that's a different set of questions, isn't it? I want you to, you can't really discuss those at all, so I want you to actually do the... do these in your discussion. In what ways are Paul's middle letters different from his early? What new revelation is contained in them? How significant is that new revelation? Paul had 2 experiences: 3 years in the wilderness, 2 years under house arrest. Why is this significant to the development of the kerygma and didache in our churches today? That's a really interesting question to reflect on, because he had to be primarily charismatic in his reflection in his 3 years in the wilderness, and then in prison, primarily kerygma. Those are just generalities. And what is the main contribution of these middle letters to the theology of Paul and to our understanding of the centrality of the church in Christ's grand strategy? Okay, 25 minutes. Okay. Reflections, Michael.
Well,
Nothing new.
Yeah, no. I'm just reminded about how the component pieces of the hubs, the clusters, and Philippians being a node, and Paul writing to them, and some of them sending teammates and financial gifts is the fourth component of the apostolic team, equipping and uniting them all together. Mm-hmm. So, just reflecting on it, you can see all the component pieces through of a network that we are to continue to build, just like Paul did. You follow? And I think we knew, like you say, it was nothing new, but it sure gives you a renewed confidence that this is what we are to be doing. Mm-hmm. That's a first reflection. A second reflection is, what's the organizing center of Colossians? I always thought it was Colossians 2, 6 through 8. Right? Used to have it memorized, but be rooted, built up in him, just as you were first taught. Come on, somebody has it memorized. You know that? Is that, so that's my, it's more of a question. Is that the organizing center for Colossians? Okay, so that's just, we don't have to answer it now, but that's I really want to know that.
You know, one of the reasons why on that bigger chart where it has the three organizing centers, one of Paul's early, one of Paul's yep. middle, one of Paul's letters, is what that does, especially if you have those passages memorized, is that when you're reading or you're just counseling somebody and questions come up out of Paul's letters at different places, or you're reading yourself and trying to get clarity on something in there that you don't understand that piece very well, the organizing center gives you if you keep taking it back to that, you can think on your feet quickly. In other words, if you're clear on those core pieces, then just as you're reading a passage, you can almost solve your interpretation naturally by going back to it. That's kind of what you were describing.
That's what I'm describing.
In the intro.
And you can do it for the 13 books now, right? Because you should be able to see the chart in your mind. You have Romans 16. You have Ephesians 3 in the middle, 7 through 10. And then you have 1 Timothy 3. You can see them. So I was trying to do that for the middle letters here. And then I hear you say Colossians has the same literary framework. You didn't say literary framework, but has the same framework as Ephesians. So I always thought Colossians 2, 6 through 8 was the organizing center of the author's intention of that book. Therefore, as you have received Christ, I'm going to try it again, be rooted, built up, and established in him. See to it that no one takes you captive by empty philosophy or human deceit or human traditions that are not good. It doesn't end that way. I can't remember what the last sentence is, right?
Mm-hmm. First principles is embedded right there.
Right, but is that the or?
And see, that's probably why I think it's why why it's best, since Colossians is written afterwards, to look at it as Paul implementing that manifesto and challenging that cluster of churches all the way down to every individual being established in that understanding, so just like you were saying, every man being built up, it does. Spend the kind of time that Ephesians didn't as much, looking at how each person needs to understand that, and how that cluster of churches needs to operate.
Yeah.
And particularly clear when you pull Philemon into it, and then you've got that dialogue of how this changes the social structure of the churches, changes our social structure relationships, And so Paul doesn't spend his time trying to reform slavery in the empire. He's trying to build the churches towards the ideal, you know, so that they become a light then to that, you know, to that watching world. What else caught you from this?
Yeah, the clarity that Philippians is a node church that is fully participating with him by sending personal ascendance, by assistant, a person. They sent financial gifts, and they were those people were co-workers. They weren't geographically located in the same place always as Paul, but they were co-workers to Paul. I'm repeating myself, but at the clarity of the component pieces of what we are to be building today, very clear. You got this is the hubs need to understand the full mystery that's been revealed. They need to understand that the church is still given apostle, prophet, pastor, teacher to the church to equip the saints until they attain full maturity. You got all your clusters.
You know, I just thought, too, a way to tie in or bring greater understanding to what you started at the beginning about the difference between positional leadership and apostolic, positional authority and apostolic authority. It's very, in our own situation, it's very clear that that when we're working at building a complex apostolic network, and when you're, Michael, as you're putting together teams and PRTs and GRTs, and we're asking leaders that are leading in their own networks to take positional responsibility, to see that all kinds of things are done, like materials are available, you know, and that people get the support and assistance that they need. But we also have to make sure that that we don't, in building a complex network, that we don't confuse those two. Because if we're working with build as a tool, we're an apostolic team, that's a tool, build. And it has to have organizational structure to be able to accomplish things, you know, such as translation and assistance in the, you know, the support of the degree, training, and so on. But if we assign somebody, this is what we've spent so much time on these last couple weeks particularly, is recognizing that if we give positional authority to somebody, but they really aren't an apostolic leader or a top apostolic leader, and then they think that we're giving them apostolic authority, that's what the mission agencies do. Mission agencies, missionaries don't have, in almost all cases, a real sense of apostolic authority that's recognized overseas by who they're ministering with. And so we give people positional, they got the position of being a missionary. But if you act like you're exercising apostolic authority and you really don't have that because those gifts aren't clearly there, then it's like you're just ruling over people. And people with true apostolic authority, like Paul has been given here with their networks, somebody's going to come along with positional authority and talk down to them, and it creates a totally upside down system. And that's what missions is why missions is all about that. It's not time really to go into that discussion right now, but you'll hear some of it in these 2 days at the conference.
Yeah, next week.
When you and I are going back and forth. But it relates very much. But I guess what I'm saying is, look at how much insight there is right here and the clarity that you say that it's just clear. But there's more. When you got Acts, when you got the early letters, when you got the later letters, we have to make sure that as we're helping churches build networks worldwide, that they know all the component parts and the system that we're putting together is consistent with this all the way through. And I just really appreciated your passion as you're building this, as you have the stewardship to do this, of your of the integrity of how you do it, with the same passion that I have of seeing that that what we're putting together and what we're encouraging our networks to put together is not some Western organizational system, but it's right here, you know, in Acts, the early, middle, later letters. And so we can see with greater clarity because of the clues that Paul gives us all through these letters of why he's doing what he's doing and what his stewardship is. Mm-hmm. Probably went too far into that, but.
I wanna before we go to our breakout groups, I'm gonna take over the screen. Is that cool?
To do what?
I wanna show you, you gotta continue to, this is the chart I made.
Oh, put it in your own words.
Yeah, continue to put it in your own words. This is the chart I made. And that's really easy for me to then go back and look at this, and then I can quickly capture in my mind what Jeff, in a sense, Jeff already taught this once, 3 years, 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, and so this is my own chart. I feel like I'm repeating myself. So this is really helpful for me personally, because I can get around the big ideas really quickly. Oh. Zoom in. It's zoomed in. All right, we're not gonna go. That's enough. I just wanted to show you. You gotta put these things in your own words and in your own format, so you can.
And every time you cycle back through, you can add greater clarity to it.
Exactly right, because you can kind of pick up where you left off. Instead of, I feel like if you don't just put it down at all. And you have no way to get back to what you put down, those two steps. This isn't holistically true, but in a sense, you almost start over. Mm-hmm. You can only get what you've retained in your head then.
But as you keep doing that, and then you got those, your own work in ministry, it really come,
yeah.
It really becomes part of your everyday conversation.
It becomes part, that's my point. It's got to become part of your walk and talk and every breath and every moment of every day. You're constantly having, you're constantly measuring everything in the culture and everything that you're doing with those principles that you're holding tight to over here.